Good afternoon. Today's date is February 15th, 2020, and you are listening to Episode 6 of Coronavirus Central, your daily source for information about the novel coronavirus of 2019, now called COVID-19 pandemic. I am your host, Tom Kaczynski, and as always, we're going to talk about the number of cases, information you can use about this outbreak, big news developments, economic implications, other rumors that are important, try to give you some information about how this has worked, and most importantly, help protect you and your family from this outbreak. This podcast represents the combined efforts of a public open source information which we invite you to join at t.me/coronaviruscentral. All podcasts for this program are hosted at coronaviruscentral.net. And information and questions can be sent to this podcast at coronaviruscentral@pm.me. We are an independent organization unaffiliated with any other group, government, or agency, and we're working internationally to seek the truth and for the safety of all against this terrible pandemic. Thank you for listening. So today's episode is going to go into a whole lot of depth about the ACE2 inhibition system, which is really the key to understanding how this disease works. And as preface to this episode, two things need to be very clear. One, I am not a medical professional, although I've read enough papers to feel like I just went through med school. So I'm going to try to offer you a very good understanding, and I want to give some credit before I get into it to Dr. Chris Martinson, amongst others, him of Peak Prosperity, which is a site you should be watching for helping to clear up some of this information in a very easy to understand format. But we're going to talk about what it is, how coronavirus seems to use it, and use examples from the previous SARS outbreak, as well as from emerging research on this to help better understand what the health threats are. It brings me no joy to tell you that this virus may be even more deadly than it seems, but it's a long explanation, and we'll go through it step by step. As you begin to get a better understanding of what's happening and how this actually works, you'll start to wonder if this... The characteristics of COVID-19 are such that if it isn't a bioweapon, it is exactly what you would want a bioweapon to do, and the death, fatality, dangers from this, we've discussed largely from a collateral perspective of disruptions to the food supply, disruptions to financial networks. But I think that in that discussion, we haven't done due diligence to understanding this disease and what it can do on its own. And so I'm going to try to go in there a little bit. Today, of necessity, will be a little bit speculative. We'll try to ground what we can in the existing research, and we'll make intelligent assertions and try to make clear what those are and where we're making them so that we have the opportunity to very intelligently put this together. And we're going to talk at the end just about a couple small pieces of fallout that I think are very relevant to this. But expect this to be a heavy medical episode today, and I'm going to try my best to make this comprehensible and keeping in mind that it's not necessarily the easiest of things. But before we do that, let's start, as we often do, with the daily statistics from COVID-19info.live. And this update is as of 1:32 p.m. on the U.S. East Coast. As of right this moment, we have confirmed reported cases from the World Health Organization. It appears as 67,170 total cases, and that we have, as a result of that, 1,527 deaths and 8,584 recoveries. So 67,190 on the confirmed, 1,527 on the deaths, and 8,584 on the recovered. And I'm going to start telling you where these cases are because I think it's important, especially as we look at travel restrictions and where that could be coming from. And we'll just go over those places with more than 20 reported cases, assuming that China's reporting may or may not be accurate, and those problems are understood at this point by most of us. But China is reporting 66,498 of those cases. Of the other countries reporting, 334 are coming out of Japan. About half of that is caught up in that issue with the Diamond Princess cruise liner. But we are seeing an outbreak. We saw NHK report that there are 8 new cases found in Tokyo. So this does seem to be spreading in Japan. Singapore has 72, Hong Kong 56, Thailand 34, South Korea 28, and Malaysia 22. And we'll see. I expect those numbers to rise, especially in Thailand's case, because I think that compared to some of those other countries, them and Malaysia are probably going to have more trouble having accurate reporting given the status of their existing health surveillance infrastructure. But those cases are out there. So that gives you an idea of where things are coming from. And what I would note is there are currently no restrictions on travel from any of those countries, except perhaps Hong Kong. But that will be where secondary people come in, where they have problems with diseases. So even if you're blocking out China, which I would note we still are not doing and we should be doing, this is a serious mistake, and we'll continue to see the spread of the disease from a health safety perspective. I mean, I understand there's an economic argument that runs counter to that, but we're just talking about the health safety perspective there. All right, so let's talk about ACE for a second. And you hear a lot about ACE. There's a lot of rumors. What races does it impact? How does it make a difference? Why do certain people get sick, not get sick? And we're going to try as best we can to kind of go through the expectations of what would be accurate in this case. That is sort of a difficult thing that we're going to have to figure out. This information is preliminary, but just to put it out there beforehand, ACE, which is called angiotensin converting enzyme, is a central component, and I'm using Wikipedia for this, and then I'll break it into English because this is not, unless you are scientifically involved, probably not helpful, of the renin-angiotensin system, which controls blood pressure by regulating the volume of fluids in the body. Remember that. That's going to be important. It converts the hormone angiotensin 1 to the active vasoconstrictor angiotensin 2. So what it basically does is it plays a role in causing your veins and arteries to contract. If this does not get used properly, what ends up happening with angiotensin converting enzyme, or ACE as we'll call it, is that your blood vessels don't work properly and you have hypertension. You can have, usually the expression is high blood pressure, because you end up having an insufficient flow and that you're not having things work correctly. And it even says, therefore, ACE indirectly increases blood pressure by causing blood vessels to constrict. And that ACE inhibitors are widely used as pharmaceutical drugs for the treatment of cardiovascular diseases. The enzyme was discovered by Leonard T. Skeggs in Jr. in 1956. It is located mainly in the capillaries of the lungs and can also be found in endothelial and kidney epithelial cells. And what that's saying is the tissue of these different organs. And in fact, what we will find, and I'm going to skip just for a second here to an article I have, and this is from the National Institute of Health in the United States. This was published in by Jay Pathol in 2004, but it's related to SARS, and I want to go into this for a second just so that you understand what ACE2 does. There's two different levels of this, right? The first level is that we understand from preliminary research that COVID is bonding through these ACE2 receptors that are used for various functions, and that these exist in different places and serve a regulatory function for blood vessel constriction. So you're going to find them everywhere. The bad news for everyone hoping that one group would be spared is that all human beings have these. To the extent to which they are found, in fact, probably is not racial, as it is so much environmental, where people who are in more polluted environments, who have diabetes, who have hypertension, who are smokers, who have respiratory distress, the research suggests that those people are more broadly at risk in the first place of being infected. And that fits perhaps partially why the spread has happened so much in East Asia, where smoking is endemic and where the air quality in China is regularly rated amongst the worst in the world, especially in Wuhan, which was an industrial city, as you may know, or if you don't know, you do. So let's go forward with this. I want to read this thing. It is from 2004, but it's really important to understand the abstract. And as usual, all the links will be up for these things, and we'll try to break this down a little bit. But the article goes, tissue distribution of ACE2 protein, the functional receptor for SARS coronavirus, a first step in understanding SARS pathogenesis, which is to say, how does SARS replicate itself? So severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, and SARS, just for a little more background, was an outbreak of a coronavirus that happened in 2003. It was incredibly deadly. Ultimately, a mortality rate was around 9-10%. And it was an outbreak in China. It was fortunately successfully quarantined, but it's worth noting that the COVID virus uses the exact same spike protein that SARS did. And if you look at it from a virology perspective, it almost looks like someone took elements of HIV and spliced them with SARS in COVID. Now, whether or not this happened naturally or was a matter of bioengineering is a decision you'll have to make. I do think that, you know, given the response we've seen from the Department of Defense in the United States, as well as CDC, and even the Chinese ambassador, who was very careful not to explicitly say this wasn't a bioweapon, there is at least considerable evidence to look at this as a potential. And I will, over the course of today, actually make a circumstantial case for that, and we'll see if you agree or don't agree. Ultimately, it only matters to the extent of controlling the response, because this thing is out either way. But we would hope that, in fact, if this was something that was being worked on in China, or whether it was done to China, that they would be coming clean so that we could prevent the human suffering and death that will result if this is a bioweapon. And there's reason, like I said, to suspect it is. But let's continue with the study. Okay, so severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, is an acute infectious disease that spreads mainly via the respiratory route, and that's what we've seen with early cases of COVID, that it comes in primarily through the lower respiratory system, but not exclusively. It can come into the small intestine the other way around. A distinct coronavirus, SARS-CoV, has been identified as the etiological agent of SARS. Recently, a metallopeptidase, that's just saying amino acid change, named angiotensin-converting enzyme 2, has been identified as the functional receptor for SARS-CoV, as it is with COVID. Although ACE2 mRNA is known to be present in virtually all organs, its protein expression is largely unknown. Since identifying the possible route of infection has major implications for understanding the pathogenesis and future treatment strategies for SARS, and by this extension, COVID, because it comes in the same way. The present study investigated the localization of ACE2 protein in various human organs, including oral and nasal mucosa, nasopharynx, lung, stomach, small intestine, colon, skin, lymph nodes, thymus, bone marrow, spleen, liver, kidney, and brain, and heart as well, by the way, but they didn't put that there, although it comes in later. The most remarkable finding was the surface expression of ACE2 protein on lung alveolar epithelial cells and on enterocytes of the small intestine. Furthermore, ACE2 was present in arterial and venous endothelial cells and arterial smooth muscle cells in all organs studied. In conclusion, ACE2 is abundantly present in humans in the epithelia tissue of the lung and small intestine, which might provide possible routes of entry for the SARS-CoV. This epithelial expression, together with the presence of ACE2 in vascular endothelium, also provides a first step in understanding the pathogenesis of the main SARS disease manifestations. And this study came from the Pathological Society of Great Britain and Ireland. What it's saying is that the two places it's most likely to get into you are through your lungs, your alveoli, and by that we mean that the alveoli are basically gas sacs where the carbon dioxide you exhale is exchanged with the oxygen you inhale to permit for cellular respiration. And one of the problems that we've talked about a little bit, but maybe should cover just in a slightly greater depth here, we'll look it up while we're talking about this, is this concept of ground glass opacity, which is one of the ways the first time around that you end up where SARS is really hurting people. And a lot of the people who are dying from the long-term pneumonia that they can't recover from, which we've seen is a symptom that, based on studies, that as much as 3/4 or more of the people are getting who are admitted to the hospital. Obviously, some people don't get it as badly, and we're grateful for that. But ground glass opacity is a nonspecific finding on computed tomography, that's a CT scan, that indicates a partial filling of air spaces in the lungs by exudate or transudate, as well as interstitial, that's between cells, thickening or partial collapse of lung alveoli. And you can look this up on Wikipedia. If you look at the picture, what it basically is saying is that the little air sacs that fill up your lungs end up so filled with fluid or ends up inflamed to the point where you can't get enough oxygen. And basically, you suffer a sort of cell death from lack of oxygen to be able to respire. That's why the initial treatment for this disease has heavily featured the use of oxygen and so that people can provide additional support, but that does require ICU support. And that's why we've seen with the preliminary infection in Wuhan, when the hospital system was overwhelmed and there was a lack of ability to provide that, we saw the death rate jump from potentially 1 or 2% up to 18%. And the bad news is for people who are case fatalities or who are severe cases, that there is going to be much more demand than supply if the transmission rates we've been talking about are anywhere near accurate. But we're going to talk a little deeper. So we understand that top level, right, that there's the pneumonia the first time around that's really deadly. And I certainly don't want to speak down to the importance of that. But what we're seeing from this study and these other studies, is that the ACE2 protein is a universal thing humans experience. And if Asians, in fact, have it more often, I suspect it's more commentary on their environmental settings than any sort of genetic predisposition, as this is a basic element of the human cardiovascular and respiratory systems. As we understand that, what we really need to do is understand deeper what happens with the ACE2 and what does the body use it for. So I'm going to read a couple different studies here that are interesting, that are quite frankly frightful, and we're going to go into a little more detail. Now, this article just came out on the 12th, and this is from DOI.org. Let's get the information just real fast where these doctors are from. I want to make sure I tell you that. And I believe this came out of the Department of Urology at Nanjing Medical University. So this is out of China. This is relatively new, and it needs to be peer reviewed, but we don't have time to do everything pretty these days. Authors are Kai Bin Fan, Kai Li, Yan Hong Ding, Wei Lulu, and Zhangqing Huang. My apologies if my pronunciation is wrong. I'm trying to learn. I will get better for our Chinese friends out there. And thank you to those in China who are listening. We are trying to understand in the United States. We want you to know that we are with your people. We support you. And any information we can share with one another, we need to do so. We're all allies in this struggle now. So this article is called ACE2 Expression in Kidney and Testes May Cause Kidney and Testes Damage After the 2019 nCoV Infection. And I'm just going to read the abstract here, and then we'll talk about it. In December 2019 and January 2020, novel coronavirus infected pneumonia, NCIP, occurred in Wuhan and has already posed a serious threat to the public health. ACE2, that's angiotensin converting enzyme 2, we're going to call that ACE2, has been shown to be one of the major receptors that mediate the entry of 2019 nCoV, now we'll call that COVID, into human cells, which also happens in severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus, SARS. Several researchers have indicated that some patients have abnormal renal function or even kidney damage in addition to injury of their respiratory system, and the related mechanism is unknown. This arouses our interest in whether coronavirus infection will affect the urinary and male reproductive systems. Here in this study, we use the online data sets to analyze ACE2 expression in different human organs. The results indicate that ACE2 highly expresses in renal tubular cells, Leydig cells, and cells in seminiferous ducts and testes. Therefore, the virus might directly bind to such ACE2-positive cells and damage the kidney and testicular tissue of patients. Our results indicate that renal function evaluation and special care should be performed in COVID patients during clinical work because the kidney damage caused by virus and antiviral drugs with certain renal toxicity. In addition, due to potential pathogenicity of the virus to testicular issues, clinicians should pay attention to the risk of testicular lesions in patients during hospitalization and later clinical follow-up, especially the assessment and appropriate intervention in young patients' fertility. So, a lot of things that end up messing with blood supply end up causing this vasoconstriction, constriction of the bloodways that can cause things to break. And the kidneys are involved heavily with blood regulation, blood cleaning. And what they're talking about with the issues with testicles is that the seminiferous ducts and testes is saying that the blood supply. So you basically, if you get this theoretically and it's bad enough, you could lose some degree of fertility. And that should be incredibly concerning because if we think of this virus and what functions it has, you know, and we're considering it as a potential bioweapon, if you were creating a bioweapon, sterility is something you might want to cause. So I will post this study in detail on the website. We'll see what ends up happening with that, but I think it's really important to understand that we to this point have been looking at ACE2 strictly from the question of how is this getting into the system. But the question we need to be asking, I think, as we go forward and people are starting to, is when your ACE2 levels inside your body, where it's conducting functions internal to your body, are disrupted, what are the consequences? And to speak to that, there's an article from Taiwan News that we're going to share here. taiwannews.tw/en/news/387-6197 for those who want to look it up. And I go through the effort because it's worth it. And this is by Jules Quartley from Valentine's Day just yesterday at 3 p.m. I assume that's local Taiwanese time. Exclusive. Chinese doctors say Wuhan coronavirus reinfection even deadlier. Instead of creating immunity, the virus can reportedly reinfect an individual and hasten a fatal heart attack. So this is from Taipei, and I'll read this article because I think it's important enough and it's pretty short. It's possible to get infected by COVID a second time, according to doctors on the front line in China's city of Wuhan, leading to death from heart failure in some cases. The claim is made by doctors working in the Hubei province capital that is at the center of the epidemic, which has to date infected 64,201 people and killed 1,487. One of the doctors reached out to a relative living in the United Kingdom who then informed Taiwan News. Both the relative and doctors asked to remain anonymous out of consideration they might face retribution by the Chinese authorities. The doctor, Li Wenliang, who first raised warnings about the Wuhan virus, was rebuked by the authorities before succumbing to the devastating disease himself earlier this month. According to the message forwarded to Taiwan News, it's highly possible to get infected a second time. A few people recovered from the first time by their own immune system, but the meds they use are damaging their heart tissue, and when they get it at the second time, the antibody doesn't help but makes it worse, and they die a sudden death from heart failure. And just to be very clear, we'll go back to it in a second. Let me read the article first, because otherwise this will get confusing. The source also said the virus has outsmarted all of us, as it can hide symptoms for up to 24 days. This assertion has been made independently elsewhere, with Chinese pulmonologist Zhang Nanshan saying the average incubation period is 3 days, but it can take as little as 1 day and up to 24 days to develop symptoms. We actually have one that came back 42, but that's probably very rare. Also, the source said that false negative tests for the virus are fairly common. It can fool the test kit. There were cases that they found that the CT scan shows both lungs are fully infective, but the test came back negative 4 times. The fifth test came back positive. According to the BBC and other media outlets, some laboratory tests are incorrectly telling people they are virus-free. There is also anecdotal evidence of people having up to 6 negative results before being diagnosed correctly. And considering that up until just 2 days ago, all these numbers, including the numbers we're seeing from everywhere outside of China, are just based upon these tests, I think that we really have to have a lot of concern that these numbers are incredibly underpronounced. But let's continue. Dr. Li Wenliang first raised concerns about this. His own test results had come back negative multiple times before he was finally diagnosed. False negative tests raise question marks over how many people have the Wuhan coronavirus, with many people believing the Chinese authorities have massively underreported the number of cases and deaths. Meanwhile, the official methodology for diagnosing the virus in China was changed this week, leading to a sudden leap in the number of recorded cases and deaths. So, and let's just talk about what that leap has put forward. The new diagnosis, just so you understand, is that if a CT scan finds that the lungs are full, that there's this ground glass capacity there, that is, along with a clinical diagnosis, now considered sufficient. And I would say that that's an accurate means of assessing. However, I would say there are other things as well that might not get caught by that, especially with a reinfection. And I want to go to, this is from the Mayo Clinic, and I'm just reading a quick little bit here about angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. So what they do is they have these ACE inhibitors that are commonly prescribed to treat high blood pressure, heart problems, and other conditions. So what they do is they relax your veins and your arteries to lower your blood pressure. They reduce the flow of ACE2. And you could see why an ACE inhibitor might actually be something you would potentially consider using in a situation like this, because the ACE receptors are the ones that are being targeted by this virus. Now, I don't know if they're looking at doing things this way or not, but I do know that when you have situations where these are negatively impacted, as people with hypertension do, they do have ACE inhibitors that they use, and they're used to prevent coronary artery disease, heart failure, diabetes, chronic kidney diseases, heart attacks, scleroderma. And the early evidence that we are seeing is people who have diabetes, who have hypertension, who have kidney problems, are the people who are most susceptible to this disease, which suggests that at a minimum that there is a relationship between not only what the disease targets originally, but in the immune response as well as the direct viral attack upon your body. And so this is where this last article we got to really ends up being interesting, because as they were saying in the Taiwan news piece, is that people who get a reinfection find it even deadlier. What people are starting to wonder if this isn't a manifestation of the cytokine storm that was seen with the Spanish flu and other epidemics previously. And what it basically means for the purposes of our conversation is that when you get a disease, your body, or a virus specifically, but it works for bacteria too, but for viruses, your body has to form antibodies that will go ahead and attack the ACE2 proteins that are being used to spread this horrible COVID infection. The problem that's happening, and we've seen cases of this, which you can find ample videos for if you search on Twitter or otherwise, is that you see people, especially younger people who are healthy with robust immune systems, just screaming one moment and then they fall over dead. And we haven't known the mechanism by which it happens, but within this ACE2 system that we're looking at with these receptors, what's very possible is that a second infection of someone who's previously had the coronavirus would cause an immune response where the body's own antibodies would end up bonding to those sites whereby ACE2 proteins usually exist in existing epithelial tissue, that is to say in heart tissue, including arteries and veins, and instead of allowing the normal process whereby what ACE2 does essentially is it converts angiotensin into a form that allows for vasodilation, for the freeing and smooth function of the arterial walls and the venous walls, and that it also prevents the fibrosis, creation of scar tissue. When these pathways are attacked, you have scarring in the heart, scarring in the different blood vessels, and you have this hypertension where basically it could cause a cardiac shutdown. And we have seen examples of how people who have diabetes, who've previously had heart attacks, who suffer from obesity, who who have impaired respiratory function, either because of voluntary or environmental factors. And all of these people are at extreme risks. And these are the people who have been dying off more in the first run. But in the second run, we've seen healthy people get sick and take heart attacks, essentially. That's what it appears to be. And they just fall over from this. And the thought there is that when coronavirus comes around the second time, when you get COVID a second time, your body's very efforts to fight off this disease may in fact be weaponized in such a way where the effort to kill it has this side effect of impairing the function of the cardiovascular system enough to prove fatal. And while it's a little early to be saying that that is indeed the case, and research will have to be ongoing from patients who have been, frankly, reinfected, there is evidence from SARS, there's evidence from the Spanish flu that this sort of a structure has happened before, and that it's something that is incredibly concerning, and I think it's something that we really need to watch carefully, which is to say that getting infected the first time is not perhaps as bad as getting infected the second time, where the healthier people are going to be the ones who take it the worst. And that being the case, it implies that we need to be even more effective about pursuing a vigorous quarantine regimen, that we need to have a better means to prevent the spread of this virus. And the problem is, you know, we understand from the initial information being provided about this that 80% of the people who get this the first time around do not experience these severe symptoms because they have a healthy immune system. But the question is, when they get it the second time or subsequent times, as this will probably now be an annual outbreak, will we have a regular and large amount of reoccurrence where people suffer heart attacks or other systemic failure from the coronavirus? And what I can't help but think of, and, you know, I'm just thinking aloud here, but I'm sharing my thoughts as they come, is that in terrorism, there is a commonly used tactic with bombings that goes something like this, where if you really want to maximize casualties for an event, what the terrorists will often do is they will set off a bomb to go off in a public place, a small bomb that causes a considerable amount of damage, but ultimately it serves as a lure where they set a second bomb to go off, say, 20, 30 minutes afterward, this much larger, that gets the first responder support, other passersby, news people. This is a regular tactic you see in terrorism. And the idea that you bring people in and you go ahead and get a larger number to get sick, in a lot of ways, fits potentially how COVID-19 is acting at a virological level. It has a significant but usually not fatal payload that weakens the societal system of medicine by requiring the usage of incredible resources and by bringing people into a hospital environment where people are more likely to be exposed to germs and where they have no choice but to go, especially for those who are in severe cases. But ultimately, what it also does is those 80% of people who are carriers asymptomatically are spreading this disease, and then they can get it a second time without realizing it, but without having the symptoms of pneumonia or any of these other issues, although they may suffer some scarring, that what may actually get them is that the healthy immune response they have against this, the very creation of antibodies, can disrupt this ACE system to such an extent to cause cardiac failure. And that would fit potentially the evidence we have on the ground. And more frighteningly, it would be consistent with a sort of bioweapon approach to how you would create a disease where you would want it to spread widely to get to everyone as quickly as it could, but then make it where people weren't so worried that they had a complete quarantine set up. You end up having this secondary explosion, and we just don't know how bad it's going to be. Now, I hope that my argument ends up being incorrect in that I am being unduly paranoid. However, there are a number of doctors going down this route. There are a number of naturally occurring diseases that can have increased severity upon recurrence, and I think we would be very foolish not to consider at least that possibility. And so I want to add some evidence to this that I watched an interview on CNBC yesterday with Secretary of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar, and he was speaking about, that China had finally said that they want to cooperate with the World Health Organization and the CDC, but that they still, as of yesterday, had not sent the visas over to get our health professionals over there. And it really makes me wonder why China is being so reticent to let others know, unless perhaps they know something. And so we're going to go a little bit more detail here. And I'm going to give you an article. This is from thedailymail.com or .co.uk. And China appoints its top military biowarfare expert to take over a secretive virus lab in Wuhan, sparking conspiracy theories that the coronavirus outbreak is linked to Beijing's army. So Chen Wei, who has been reportedly taking the helm of the Wuhan Institute of Virology, her appointment prompted claims that the classified lab is run by the army. And, of course, they claim that's not the case, but she has been very well understood to be high up in this. She's a major general of the People's Liberation Army, and that she now is taking charge there. And she was also heavily involved with the creation of the medical spray that was used during the SARS outbreak in 2003. And what you've noticed if you're watching any videos from China, as we are, is that they have been working desperately to spread disinfectant around the clock, perhaps because they understand that there is something going on here with not just a primary infection, but a secondary infection. And she has said of fighting this novel coronavirus, I would say, Chen said, the epidemic is like a military situation. The epicenter equals to the battlefield. And China has even put out, there's a number of documents from the Beijing Central Committee of the CDC describing this as warlike status. And but here's where this gets a little more interesting, right? So, and I'm going to share this. This is from a Twitter thread, but I've been following this woman pretty closely for a while. We'll go and just consider a possibility. Her name is Jennifer Zhang, and she works for NTD, which is a news outlet out of East Asia there. And she's been having a lot of the better on-the-ground coverage and bringing into the English world a lot of the things happening in the Chinese world. But at 4:47 p.m. on February 14th, and we'll have a link to this, she posted a tweet that said, "This is really a bombshell. The Naval University of Engineering in Wuhan, one of the five comprehensive military universities, the PLA." And just for those who don't understand the way structure works in China, the People's Liberation Army runs the whole military and essentially is a sort of autonomous but connected part of the Communist Party that has its own sort of abilities above the civil state, issued a lockdown notice on January 2nd, 18 days before the government admitted there was an epidemic, and 21 days before the quarantine was put in place. So how does the PLA's military universe have have a lockdown notice on January 2nd if some of the doctors reporting this didn't even know, unless someone in the Chinese Communist Party or at least the People's Liberation Army knew? And there's a connection to the document, and I will read an English translation of this that was spread. And it reads as follows. "Notice on the control measures of unexplained pneumonia and the strict prohibition of foreign personnel's entry into the school. To all visitors, as far as we know, the Health Commission of Wuhan has issued an emergency notice on reporting the treatment status of the unexplained pneumonia. It says that experts delegated by the National Health Commission went to Wuhan and confirmed that the situation in the Central Military Hospital is true. To prevent the spread of the unexplained pneumonia on campus, the school implemented all the existing requirements and proposed related control measures immediately. Now, according to instructions from the number 298 Naval File, notice on the consultation of implementing control measures of the unexplained pneumonia, the entry of foreign personnel into the school is strictly prohibited." And by foreign, they do mean they are not people who go there, not international. For visitors who indeed have to enter, they need to report to the Safety Service Department and ask for their permission. After obtaining the permission, visitors must take a temperature at the school gate. Anyone whose temperature is higher than 38°C is prohibited to enter the school. We hereby notify the above. The Police Service Department of People's Liberation, Naval University of Engineering, 2nd January 2020. And you can see the there's the Chinese there for those who can read it, and you're welcome to check it out. So there's a question here, right, which is why are they shutting down access to these to their military university, which is a privately run entity of the People's Liberation Army, 3 weeks in advance if they didn't know this was something? And I think that this potentially represents a compelling piece of circumstantial evidence that in fact suggests this could be a bioweapon. When you factor that with the fact that China has been reticent to allow public aid to come in there, that they have been deliberately underreporting statistics, and the numerous videos you can see of very questionable actions, even by their own admittedly authoritarian standards, I think that when you look at that and you look at how this how COVID actually behaves, there is reason to believe that this is a serious bioweapon that has escaped. And whether it is or is not a bioweapon, which we cannot know, and frankly probably never will know, what we see is the severity of the response suggests this is far greater than the governmental and institutional actors like the WHO are letting out. I mean, the level of bureaucratization and just frankly absolute stupidity they have been engaging in on this issue, where they've been more concerned about controlling the information than they have about public treatment, is absolutely disgusting. And, you know, you already see, even I'm looking at her Twitter account for this site now, you know, they're trying to promote legitimate sources of information. Well, we are going to have to find them ourselves. And as an open source intelligence network, I want to say how much we rely upon our listeners, our viewers, and our participants, especially in the Telegram chat at Coronavirus Central, to get this information out there and to give us information from the ground that allows us to contradict the public narrative where appropriate. I mean, we're not looking to do anything but seek out the truth for the safety and protection of all people involved. And there's just one other little piece I decided to share today, which isn't really connected to anything, but I think it's really important potentially for what could be coming down the line as you work at your preparedness. And this is from Bloomberg.com, and it says, China quarantines cash to sanitize old banknotes from virus. And the new coronavirus has restricted millions of Chinese people to their homes and towns, and now old banknotes are being quarantined. So essentially, what this is doing is it's making it where the ability to use cash, because it's argued that it's a disease vector, because we understand that this does spread through droplet transmission onto surfaces, is something they want to stop. However, I am very concerned that if we see these sorts of measures happen in other countries, and China does most of their currency transactions electronically. They tend to use mobile phones very heavily, except in rural areas. So this may not be such a big issue there, but in the United States and other countries, it would be an incredibly huge issue, because a lot of people exist outside of the banking system or who have cash reserves. And this is one reason why we'll close today by talking about a basic prep, which is that you want to have access to goods you can trade or other means of going ahead and being able to get the supplies you want. We have said from the beginning in this show that you need to be preparing for a extended time of not having access to regular goods. We've talked a lot about the supply chain disruptions. We see a number of quarantines. Our base recommendation is that you try to get at least the ability to survive based upon what you have in hand, whatever place you are, for 30 days. But as this looks likely to go longer than that, and as now we're learning potentially that the risk of reinfection, even for healthy people, is very challenging from a health perspective. And I should add one other point here, which makes a vaccine almost impossible, because the way a standard vaccine works, just so you understand, is you get a near virus that has similar traits that causes the same sort of immune response. And this was why they could never develop a proper vaccine for SARS or MERS. They said that the problem was, well, the thing was contained, but the bigger issue is the cytokine storm, where anytime you try to prevent a coronavirus or any other infection which enters the body through the ACE2 protein inhibition pathway, all right? What ends up happening is the effort to prevent that causes the body's immune system to attack its own heart function, and that the risks of the vaccine may very well outweigh the benefits of deploying it against the coronavirus. And the problem is that whether or not we don't know yet, but the initial evidence that we're starting to have based upon the fact we're having these potential heart failure situations where we see these people fainting, and we don't know the pathology of why they died, but it looks like there is at least some periodic conveyed immunity that causes a heightened immune response that may be responsible for these deaths that are dying a very different way from the second time around. And as all that ends up being added into your calculations, I think that as you begin to assess the severity of this disease, you may make the decision, as my family has, to go into voluntary self-quarantine at a point at which the public health risk feels insufficient for you. And while we have said 30 days, I would recommend 90 days, and now you think you're not going to be able to use cash. So make sure you have goods that you can barter and trade for. If you're in the United States, I mean, I hate to say it, but the usual prepper items are good. Bullets are going to have value, tobacco, alcohol, food supplies, potable water will be huge, batteries will be big. And think in terms of what you would need to survive rather than thinking you're going to buy your way out of it. Cash is going to be worthless. There are a number of people who will say invest in silver and gold. I think over the long term, those will have value, but realistically, they're more likely to get stolen from you. They're not going to help you. And frankly, if you have 30 days of food and someone has $1 million in silver and there's 30 days where there's no resupply, your food is worth more than that silver. Understand that you want goods for their transactional value. I'm literally looking at a stack of toilet paper as I say this to you, because you know what? The world is a messy place and you want to be able to clean yourself up in it. Cleaning supplies are going to be big. If you don't have 70-grade isopropyl alcohol, that should be on your list. Hydrogen peroxide, make sure you have some bleach. And remember that trading is going to be different and it's going to be hard because you won't want to interact with other people. So the best thing you can do is prepare in advance. Here at Coronavirus Central, as we do every day, excepting tomorrow, which I am going to be taking off Sundays just for a little bit of recovery time. We have been what you'll need to do is get more information. We will continue to provide that for you. We'll continue to look at supply chains and the evolving nature of this threat, as well as other linked threats. Current things we're looking at are impacts on the food supply chain. Doesn't look that good, to be honest with you, but there is an opportunity to prepare now. Please take advantage of it. And what I would say here at the very end is that, as always, we close with prayer on this show. I'm a devout Christian, and it's a time to start praying because it's very possible, whether through malintent or just a terrible mistake, that we are dealing with a weapon that humanity was not meant to face, a form of pestilence that will have an incredibly terrible impact beyond what we already have. I certainly hope it is not the case, but whether it is or is not, we pray for mercy to the suffering, courage to the brave first responders, and for restoration of health for all who are afflicted, that they may not suffer needlessly, and for those who have lost loved ones in this, for peace and comfort for them. So I would just say that in the Lord's name and offer my blessings to you all as we go forward, and just say that we will continue. CoronavirusCentral.net is now up and live. We should have some fun theme music for the new show, and we will continue working to provide those. Links will be available as always, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend safely. Practice safe hygiene practices, masks and goggles when you're going out. This may be spread far wider than people think. And make sure you use good hand washing regimen and be very mindful of where you put things and what you're around. Your life very well may depend on it. All right. Have a good day.